This is ensemble member Martha Levy, and you're listening to the Steppenwolf Theatre Company podcast.
Hi, I'm Polly Carl, Director of Artistic Development at Steppenwolf Theatre Company, and I am honored to be here with Frank Galati, the Director of Endgame. Frank, thanks for joining me today.
A pleasure. Great to be here.
So I'm going to ask you a few questions about the play.
Okie dokie.
Get people excited about coming to see it.
Yep.
First of all, you're working with an all-ensemble cast this time through.
Yeah.
Can you talk about how that's impacted the rehearsal process?
Well, it's an extraordinary opportunity. I have had in the past large numbers of ensemble members in various casts, going all the way back to the Grapes of Wrath and in the early days in the old space, You Can't Take It With You. But this is an all-ensemble cast, four artists of, I think it was Jim Ingalls who said, it's like Mount Everest. And I said, no, it's more like Mount Rushmore, because they are giants as artists and as ensemble members with a very long history. That's the secret, really. It's the fact that we have worked together for so many years. We've known each other for so many years. So on personal as well as artistic levels, it's not just a shorthand, although that I think is part of it. You can come right to the point in discussing the work and critiquing the work and making suggestions. But it's also a kind of trust, deep confidence in one another, patience rather than impatience. I mean, you'd think that with a family, when you know each other very well, there might be a degree of frustration, the way frustrations build in families. But because we are families, when we work together, we seem to flow into one another's interior. You know, I mean, we think inside of each other. We know how to listen to each other. I'm not boasting. I'm just saying that these advantages are accrue from an ensemble that's been together for a long time. And of course, with Billy Peterson and Martha Levy and Fran Guinan and Jan Barford, you have four instruments at the pitch of their game, in full cry, fully mature, deeply wise and with enormous interpretive skill, vocal instruments that are perfectly tuned. And in the case of, you know, Beckett's work, as you know, and with this play, it's funny, it's vivid, it's strange, it's compelling, it's fascinating. But on a kind of fundamental level, it's a quartet for four voices. It has a musical score of rare beauty. There are arias and duets and trios and quartet sequences. There are recitatives. There are cadenzas. There are ravishing melodies. And there are also dissonances. And all of that is part of the orchestrated chamber piece that Endgame is.
That makes me want to see it right there.
Oh,
so
good.
Maybe we can stop the interview. That was so good. You're addressing this in your answer, but talk about why you wanted to do Endgame on the Steppenwolf stage. What was the passion behind that at this moment in your career?
Well, Endgame is maybe the voice of the 20th century. It expresses in one dramatic masterpiece the central issues of living in the post-World War II world as a family. I mean, it's, you know, some would say it's sort of post-apocalyptic. It's a dystopia. It's, you know, it's a bomb shelter. The word shelter it appears in the text. But Beckett, in more recent, before he died, directed a couple of productions, one in particular in English, in which he changed the word shelter to refuge, in order, I think, to sort of avoid the associations of the world of the play with a kind of projection of some sort of post-apocalyptic world of desolate, unpopulated, kind of the end of the world sort of spectacle. But it's really a comedy about family members who are living against a backdrop of doubt and nihilism and darkness and struggle to go on. So against that backdrop of travail are played out family relationships between fathers and mothers and sons and brothers, however you want to constitute the tyranny that manifests itself in the play. It's basically the tyranny of a family, and it's the bondage of love, really. I mean, it's a deeply personal play. And in spite of the fact that it's thought of as being, you know, either absurdist or existentialist or philosophical or moody or gloomy, it's a play that is charged with the concerns and issues that are at the heart of our human experience. So in a certain way, it's very realistic. It's really very accessible and fascinating because Beckett has such a grip on the interconnectedness of family relationships, the very, very complicated relationship between fathers and sons in particular. I mean, the mother is present, and the loss of the mother, she seems to pass away during the course of the action. The loss of the mother is a huge event, but it's really the tyranny of the father over the son, which is manifest in three generations in the play. It reminds us, in weirdly, as we're working on it, in a way of O'Neill, even of Chekhov, because it circles around these chains that bind us to each other and the families that we are born into.
You talk about the humor and of Beckett and how really very funny Endgame
yes.
is. I know the first week of rehearsal, you watched that 1964 short film called Film.
Yes.
And starring Buster Keaton.
Right.
And why did you choose to watch that movie? And can you talk about the physical comedy in the play?
Yeah. Beckett, in all of his plays, is fond of drawing upon routines from vaudeville, from the music hall. His plays are full of pairs of clowns, Laurel and Hardy-esque, Chaplin-esque characters who have often a kind of tick or a twitch, a physical disability, an ailment that gives them an odd walk, an amble, a rolling gait. Even in the novels, Murphy, for instance, is described in painstaking detail as someone who kind of lumbers along because of his physical problems. So those kinds of infirmities are the stuff of broad physical comedy. Clowns, you know, have big feet and big floppy shoes and big noses and big ears, and the clown has a special kind of mental landscape too. I mean, the clown is, there are lots of different kinds of clowns. In fact, I think you could say that the pair of comic figures in Endgame, Ham and Clove, are two different kinds of clowns. One is the august clown, which is Ham, who's a raconteur, who's a puffed up, pompous, theatrical magnate, producing things and generating it. I mean, one of his very first lines is, "Can there be misery loftier than mine?" you know, which is hysterical. And it's all about, you know, the sort of ego of the pompous clown. The pantalone is a version of the pompous clown. And the other clown, the clown that Clove sort of embodies, is the sad sack, the literal-minded, oh, what a mug I am. I forget the ladder. I have to go back and get the ladder. Damn it. Oh, I forgot the glass. I mean, you know, he's absent-minded and literal-minded. And those aspects of the human personality, which are part of all of us, are swollen and intensified in the clown characters. And Becca totally understands that. And hence, Buster Keaton as the choice for the hero of this short film that Alan Schneider directed. It isn't, unfortunately, it isn't a very well-made film. It was done hastily in the middle of the summer. Some of the actors were very inexperienced, and it looks, it's not very skillfully shot. But it is a rare opportunity to see Buster Keaton very late in life with his squashed hat and his long ratty coat, groping his way through Beckett's interiors and avoiding, which is what he's trying to do through the whole film, being seen. He doesn't want to be seen. And that's a complicated idea for Beckett, the idea that to be is to be perceived. And even in Endgame, Ham needs an audience, like any Ham actor needs an audience. He doesn't want to be abandoned. He doesn't want to be left alone. He even wants his dog to be looking up at him. You know, is he looking at me? Is he begging me for a bone? Does he want to be taken out for a walk? You know, the adoration of, the creatures, Ham says, the creatures. Everything has to be explained to them, you know. So Buster Keaton was the perfect choice for Beckett's one foray into film.
This is my last question. The title of the play, of course, refers to the final stage of a chess game, you know, that mm-hmm. moment when few pieces remain and the game hinges on the restricted movement of the king. Why do you think Beckett picked this as the central image for the play?
I think for several reasons, because he's interested in paralysis. He's interested in the experience of impotence, of a kind of incapacity to work, to continue the struggle, to keep on going, and yet the imperative to keep on going, the necessity of keeping on going, the fact that suicide, no matter how much despair or how depressed the character may be, is not an option. But also, I think Endgame is the kind of perfect constellating metaphor and the title of the play, because Beckett was a great chess player, and he understood the way great minds who are fascinated by chess do. I'm not one of them. The thrill of the strategies of chess and the sophistication of the power struggle, because chess is really a game of war. It's a very violent game. And Beckett played chess with some pretty formidable opponents like Marcel Duchamp, who was not only a chess player, he wrote about chess. He wrote a regular column about chess in the Paris paper. And Marcel Duchamp, an artist of, you know, immense importance in 20th century European art, brings a similar kind of fascination with the geometry, you know, of the chessboard, the formidable order of it, and the strata of power, the pawn, the knight, the bishop, the king, the queen. And the end game is, I believe, the most fascinating and kind of mesmerizing of the three parts, the beginning, the middle, and the end game in chess. So we're seeing powers futilely struggling the way we do in families in their attempt to survive to the end of the game.
Frank, thank you so much for this interview. Really appreciative. That was fantastic.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Great to talk to you. Great question.
Oh, thanks, Frank.